Hi, my name is Reggie Watts. And I feel quixotic about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Very nice. I love that. No one's used that word yet. I don't think it's been used on the podcast.
On the earth in at least 20 years.
On the earth. Yeah, that's true.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Okay, ready when you are.
And even when you're not, it's Betty Crocker's Ready to Mix Frosting. Hey there. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I came in hot. I think there are days where I come in hot, and today I am nuclear-fueled, Conan. Had a good workout this morning.
Oh.
Yep. Lifted a lot
fit.
Of... Well, thank you very much. You don't just get a body like mine. You need to really abuse yourself. Sona, good to see you.
Nice to see you, too. You did come in hot, because we were laughing, and you're like, no one can laugh without me.
When I hear laughter in a room I'm not in, I suspect fraud. You know, it's like a company that couldn't possibly make that. It just doesn't seem right. I'm always like, what? Laughter? And I'm not there? This must be something just is fundamentally wrong. So I came rushing in here.
Yeah.
And then I guess Gourley was chuckling everybody.
I was just telling them something that you had said earlier that was so funny.
Ah,
I was just
there we go. There we go. Yeah. All right. Well, that makes sense. I'm satisfied. My name is Joy Killer. What? Laughter? I must go crush it. Make it about me.
Yeah.
I just noticed Sona's wedding ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just about to hit on you. No. No, I was going to say, it was your hand was out, and it was tilted, and it's very nice.
Well, quite a rock.
I have, my fingers got skinnier, so I have this plastic coil around it, and I've had it there.
Can't you just go to a jeweler and they can quickly resize it?
Well, because I think it's going to go back up, I'm sure. I think. So I'm just leaving it there.
Okay.
So it's going to just get bigger. Eventually, the whole ring's just going to be a plastic coil, I think.
Yeah. Why don't you just lose that? I'll hold on to the actual diamond, and you can just wear a plastic coil.
No.
You'll get it back at one point.
I don't want to do that.
Well, anyway, I just noticed it, and it's nice.
Thank you.
I don't think I ever looked at it really before.
Thank you.
I actually don't even think I look at you very often.
Oh, that's nice.
No. I'm just very so focused on me and what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, that's clear.
Yeah. And so I don't... Oh, Gourley. Well,
that's me. This is what I look like.
Oh, my God.
You usually have a mirror in front of both of us, just so you never have to actually look at us.
I make every employee at Team Coco wear an oval mirror on their face.
It's a two-way mirror, so they can see through it, but you just see yourself.
No, I actually am insisting on a one-way mirror, so they crash into things and get into terrible car accidents.
Yeah, it's a mess around here of just broken glass.
People are just smashing into the wall all the time, but I'm happy because I just see me. I'm an opera singer warming up, me.
You did come in hot.
You're singing a lot, too.
Yeah, I sure am.
But you didn't come in hot.
I've got a beautiful voice.
That usually implies, like, come in hot, you're grumpy, you're mad, you've got something to prove. No, you came in kind of just, you're just living, you're buzzing.
You know what? I'm happy. Life is good. I am happy to be here at the podcast. I'm with some of my favorite people. Hold on, let me put on my glasses. Oh shit, I didn't see who was in the room.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, I thought I was with Jeff Goldblum and the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. And then it turns out it's Gourley and Sona. I apologize.
I wish Jeff Goldblum was here.
And the ghost of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
He'd be like, I'm just was at the theater. What the fuck? And I'm like, Abe.
You
really
wrote the Gettysburg address and you just said what the fuck?
I know. I've told you that sketch I always wanted to write where...
Oh, yeah.
I think I mentioned on the air once. Yeah. Lincoln is in heaven and he's walking around and he sees a group having a really good time and he goes up to the group because they're all laughing real hard and John Wilkes Booth is at the center. And and Lincoln's like, what the fuck is he doing up here in heaven? And they're like, you know what? He was really good to his mom and da-da-da. And that night with you, he was having an off night.
It was a one-off.
He was having an off night. And Lincoln's really mad. And they're like, come on, Abe. And then Booth is like, you know, Mr. Lincoln, I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking, but I am a big fan. And he goes to shake Lincoln's hands and Lincoln swats it out of the way. Like, I'm not going to shake your hand. And then everyone else, Aristotle, Gandhi, everybody else is like, whoa, Abe, not cool. I had this idea like 25 years ago and I never wrote it.
We should make this happen because you've mentioned it a few times.
I know.
How does it end?
For your birthday.
What?
Yeah. How does it end?
Yeah. Does it have a button?
They get into a fight and Booth shoots Lincoln again.
Oh, no.
And then he goes to second heaven.
Yeah. But everyone says, like, you know, Abe, you were kind of being a dick. And Abe's Abe gets sent down to hell. I don't know. I don't know how it ends. But
this has just been spitballed. You've never written it.
I've talked about it a lot. I have so many sketches in my head that I never wrote because they just seemed too weird and arbitrary. That one always amused me.
I want to know what something is too weird for you, because have you seen some of the shit you put on TV?
What a nice way to put it. You know, I'm going to make sure if I ever get a major award for my work in comedy, I'm going to have Sona give it to me and she'll do the speech up front. Here, they give the award to Conan O'Brien after 90 years in comedy is Sona Movsesyan. You know, I don't know much about Conan, but have you seen some of the shit he did?
I meant that in a loving way.
I'm sure you did.
In an admiring way. Mm-hmm. I
don't like your wedding ring anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'll show you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I think it's poorly fitted to your finger. There, that'll show you. All right, gang, let's all settle down.
Okay.
I like when I make it sound like we've got to get down to business, and then it's talking to a funny person and being idiots. It's not like we're about to start an algebra class. But anyway, my guest today, of course, a talented musician, comedian, and now author with his new memoir entitled Great Falls, Montana, Fast Times, Post-Punk Weirdos, and A Tale of Coming Home Again. Very excited he's here today. My friend, Reggie Watts, welcome. Reggie, you and I got some history, and that's why I'm so thrilled that you're here today. Real history.
Yes.
You have written a book, and you have a fantastic story to tell, and you're a very talented and also a very strange fellow, let's just be honest. I mean, the glasses alone, hold up those glasses so our viewers can see, and our listeners. Those are they hexagons? What are those?
They're hexy. They're hexy, baby.
Yeah.
The future's hexy.
How many... Now, I'm gonna take, because I don't know if Matt Gourley, Sona knows this, but I don't know if Matt knows that Sona was on the tour.
Yes.
We did this kooky tour, which was really fun and out there in 2010. And it was a real happening. And we needed someone to open for me on this tour that went all around the United States of America. And we found Mr. Reggie Watts. Mm-hmm. And Reggie was a great opener for the show, and you did an amazing job. And one of the things you did so brilliantly is people were coming to the show. We put it together so quickly that nobody knew what it was. And I wanted them to know right away, this isn't the show you thought you were going to get. In fact, this is unlike any show you've ever seen. So you can't just have a standard. I just can't have a comedian come out and go, hey, everybody, how's it going? Yeah. How you doing? Hey, what's with the sweater? Who died and gave you the sweater because they were dead and didn't need the sweater anymore?
That guy sucks.
Oh, that guy's terrible.
He sucks.
He's dead, so he doesn't need the sweater, but the sweater's what fucking killed him. Anyway, I love that comment. It's a great bit.
He is good in context.
He's very good in context. And you should really see the sweater he would go after every night. And it was the same sweater.
Plant.
It was a plant.
Hack.
Anyway, we couldn't get that guy. I wanted that guy so badly. His name's Hack B. Hackenstein. We couldn't get him. No, but someone had heard of, have you seen Reggie Watts? And you were not a known quantity at the time, but we saw you and you were absolutely exactly what I wanted. And I can't even describe what you would do, but it was so original and so fun and so interesting and so different that people would come in and they'd see the warm-up and they would think, you were there, Sona.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, what is happening? What is this going to be? And it was great. You were perfect.
It was awesome. Yeah.
But you did one thing that completely blew me away, and then I'm going to let you speak at some point, but I'm just going to monologue for a while because it's Reggie Watts, and I'm very excited. We were touring in the summer. It was very hot. This gentleman would wear very, very heavy sweaters.
Yes.
All the time.
Always.
And lots of corduroy.
Yep.
And suspenders.
Yeah. And layers.
And layers.
Yeah.
And we would be in Texas. We would be in, you tell me, Georgia. It would be 130 degrees.
Yeah.
And you would be walking around. You never sweat. And then I would be sitting in my dressing room alone doing guitar scales and trying to warm up my vocals for the show and just trying to get ready. And then I would wander down the hallway and I would pass Reggie's dressing room. Mm-hmm. And you will testify that this is true, Sona. I would pass Reggie's dressing room. And it was always a happening.
Yes.
I would look in the room and there was always about 35 people there. Beautiful women, but with like an eye patch, a beautiful woman with an eye patch and a falcon on her shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Tanya.
Yeah, exactly. Tanya. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really
contract
did.
Killer.
The coolest people I've ever seen.
And it was, they were always different. Every time it was different people. Oh, there's a German man with a miner's helmet and he's got a goat with him, but he's also drinking absinthe. And it was just this insane collection of human beings. And they would always look at me like, was ist los? Ist dein Conan? And you'd be like, oh, hey, Conan. I'd be like, oh, hey. And you would all be like, a hookah. There are doves in the room. Prince was there. I don't know. Like, you had the, it was always a happening.
Yeah.
You're the coolest guy I've met. How did you do that? How did you? And we'd be nowhere. We'd be like, oh, we're here in Tallahassee, and there are those people again. And they don't. Did you fly them in?
I don't know how that. You know what? Really, it had to do with the tour. I mean, who wouldn't want to come and hang out backstage at your tour?
It was pretty fun.
People were like, what is happening? Like, they were like, as much as you're saying, like, what is happening with this guy? Like, my friends were like, what's going on with Conan? It's like, I'm opening for it's impossible. Let me come. You know, and I'd be like, yeah, it was easy. You know, everyone was so excited.
It was so weird because we also never knew who was going to be backstage. And whatever state or city we were in, the most famous people from that state or city would show up.
Right.
And so, you know, we'd be in Seattle and they'd say, you know, Eddie Vedder is going to, Pearl Jam's going to come do something on the show. And I'd be like, what? And I'd say, this isn't funny. This is hurtful, this prank. And then Eddie Vedder, which, yeah, go ahead.
One of my favorite.
And this is Aaron Blaert speaking.
Yes.
Now.
I discourage
his interruptions, but go ahead, Aaron.
I remember.
And just so you know, you'll never be allowed to speak.
Yeah.
Right? Oh,
yeah.
No. Okay. I know that. I saw it in the contract.
That tour was so nuts. I have a specific memory of being in San Francisco. And I was backstage, like trying to get from one side of the stage to the other. And there's this very narrow hallway. And I'm kind of walking very fast down the hallway. And you're talking to somebody. And I just go to kind of push this person away. And as I'm about to touch them, I realize you're talking to Neil Young.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe I'll just wait.
Yeah, don't you fucking manhandle Neil Young.
I just waited.
But you were such a good, I don't know. It was one of those, so many things went miraculously right on that tour. And I would say the first thing was, our opener, which was a total Hail Mary, it was Reggie Watts. Mm-hmm. And you just set the tone right away. And whatever happened on that crazy tour, you were like, of course this is happening. And then, of course, as I got to know you better throughout the tour, which was a real delight. And I've seen your career blossom so beautifully subsequently, and now you have this book out. I realize that you have this improbable background that kind of made you coming into that tour feel like, yeah, what else you got? You know what I mean? I don't think a weird situation could be created for you that you couldn't handle.
You know, honestly, that's an amazing observation because that's how it feels. Because you know, like all the stuff that I did that I chose electively to do, and that was available to me growing up. I mean, that stuff was pretty weird. And
I'm going to take people through it quickly just to set the table. And then obviously I want you to tell this story, but you are born, you're born with no citizenship. Okay. Where were you born?
I was born in Stuttgart.
Stuttgart, Germany.
Stuttgart, close to Zuffenhausen.
Okay. Well, of course, that goes without saying.
Of course.
Right near the town of Lederhosen.
Of course, Lederhosen, Zuffenhausen,
And your dad was Air Force serviceman, right?
Yes.
And so you're born, you're a military brat.
Mm-hmm.
And you move a lot.
Yeah, a few times. I will say, like, a lot. For the amount of time that we did move, other friends of mine were like, I was in Oklahoma for 2 years. Then I went to partial high school and partial junior high. For me, it's like we moved to four different countries and then ended up in the United States. So
right.
Until about three and a half or four.
And you have this experience of you're living in Europe. Your parents are a biracial couple, and that is very accepted. And then you move to Montana, where there may be a different vibe, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And I'm not just guessing. It's in your book. Tell us about that.
It was very interesting. I mean, it was a mix of being aware of that and also not. Are we allowed to cuss on here?
It's actually encouraged.
Okay. Well, and also, and I also just didn't give a fudge about it.
That's a little too harsh.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, fudge is not one of our favorite desserts. Can we
meep that out?
Yeah. We have a delay.
I love a hot fuck sundae, but I despise a hot fudge sundae.
It's so close.
It's so close.
Dangerous.
I'm telling you, if you haven't had a hot fuck sundae, if you haven't lived.
Oh, my Lord. My Lord. Let me write down that time code.
So it's interesting because... Don't you think, and I've always had this theory, that growing up kind of with the, what many people would describe as the radical instability of mixed race parents, Europe moving constantly in radically different countries, not really sure what the hell's going on, prepares you in a weird way to say, I'm going with whatever.
Oh, 100%. I mean, everywhere that I go, I had to learn how to adapt because I was always ill-equipped. You know, I wasn't speaking English very fluently when I first started going to preschool. So for me, I was trying my best, but I had to learn English pretty quickly. And then I had to learn how to make friends and you know, friends were like, oh, this guy's weird, you know. And so I had to figure out ways to quickly get in to people's like center of like who they are. And that worked pretty well. I think eventually, like, you just get, it's all about your rep. Even, like, in the entertainment industry, it was like, hey, you know, your reputation, it says a lot about how you can get hired. It's yeah. It kind of goes back then, too, in school. It's like, if you work on, you know, being someone who's helpful and funny and joking all the time and slightly ornery, but, like, you know, with good intentions, that's your rep, and it helps, goes a long way with friends.
Yeah. I've always maintained comedy is not a hobby. It's a defense mechanism that's learned it's a survival mechanism that you learn very early.
It's totally true.
You learn it very early, and then you forge your whole life around it. And then someone later on in the process, people go, oh, we'll give you a check for that. And you go, what?
It's like, no.
I've been using that to stay alive.
It's like, okay. All right. Are you sure?
This is what kept me from being beaten by those hooligans.
Oh, my God. So many fights averted.
You moved to Great Falls, Montana, and I love this because the cover of your book, and I want people to get this book, but it's the kookiest.
Just for the cover, guys.
It's the kookiest book cover I've ever seen. It's your head floating majestically, disembodied, above it looks like the falls Great Falls, Montana.
Yeah, it's the Anaconda Hydroelectric Dam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm mad at you because I need to write my autobiography.
You do.
There's a lot of pressure on me to write it. And my idea was my head floating above a hydroelectric dam somewhere in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
Yeah, Western Midwest. And so I'm screwed. Thank you.
WMW. That's fine. There's a couple more ideas you can use.
Did you encounter racism when you were a kid, when showing up in this environment?
For sure. Some of it I kind of chose to not... acknowledge, you know, just keep doing my thing. But definitely there were like full on, you know, I got chased by some guys in a pickup truck with a BB gun, you know, like, and I was like trying to hide from them and stuff for a while. That was fun. But, you know, really while it was happening, I was like, oh, this is what it's like. Just kidding. This is a valuable experience. Okay, cool. So this is what
it's
like.
Did you look to a camera that wasn't there?
Yeah, totally. I did. I said, are we still rolling? I just yelled up to the sky or whatever.
Although terrifying, running from these racists is a valuable experience. I'll probably learn from it. Great. Well, back to running.
I know, back to running again. And I don't even like running. No, I mean, there were, I remember my gym teacher, I don't know if it was in the book or not, but there was my gym teacher. He and I had this weird, like, I just didn't like him. He didn't like me. And I remember walking to the gym, and he was in the hallway before going into the gymnasium. And it was just he and I, and he kind of pulled me aside, and he was like, I want you to know that you're not fit to eat with pigs. And then I just looked at him. And I was like, thank you so much. And then I walked away. And it was like people saying stuff like that to me. I was like, what are you doing? Like for me, it wasn't so much like, oh, I feel hurt by it. It's mostly I was going like, what are you doing?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, first of all, that's horrible. But at the same time, what makes sense about it is that you're refusing to even honor it. You're refusing to, yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, totally.
Good talk.
You got
and then
it out.
You keep moving and you're totally denying that person their anger, their rage, whatever is going to give their feet purchase on the ground, which in a way is genius. The aspect I identify with is the non-confrontational aspect.
Right.
I was always very light on my feet. And if people didn't like me or thought I was weird or was coming after me for one of a thousand reasons, I wouldn't stand my ground and go, oh, yeah, what are you going to do about it? I would say 35 things that kind of confuse them, behave in a strange way, and then sort of drift through the wall.
Yeah, totally.
I'm not advocating that approach in life because there's part of me that wishes that in the movies, what you do is you kiss your fist and punch them across the room.
You get your goddamn hands off of my.
Yeah. But what happened to me is I would kiss my fist and then fall in love with my fist.
No!
And then start tonguing.
And
then you would fudge it.
Yeah, exactly. I would fudge the shit out of that fist. My highest compliment I can pay to you is that you are impossible to categorize because it's like, he's a musician. Yeah. Well, he's a band leader. Well, but he's a comedian. Yeah. But he's also an artist, but he's also a prankster. It's like, which I think is great. It's like you refuse to be categorized, but music must have come to you very early, I would think.
Music is the secret weapon. I think for me growing up, I loved music. My parents loved music. They listened to it. My dad was a huge jazz head. Mm-hmm. And my mom and he like shared their love of jazz, but also specifically like more funk, like James Brown and mm-hmm. things of that nature. And my mom loved folk music, like, you know, Nana Mouskouri and those types of Edith Piaf and those types mm-hmm. of singers, Julio Iglesias. And so I was around so much music. Ray Charles was someone I gravitated to as a kid. I loved watching the way that he moved when he played mm-hmm. piano. Mm-hmm. And then, for some weird reason, Elvis Presley. I was like a huge, my first record was an Elvis Presley record. Mm-hmm. I was impressed with the press. But he was, you can, that's trademarked. You will have to meep that.
No one's ever said that about Elvis Presley. No one's. Ever. And everything's been said about him.
I know, totally.
And no one's ever said, I'm impressed with the press. Yeah. I feel fondly for the Lee. Lee? Press Lee. What? Lee for the Lee. Fondly for the Lee. What the fuck?
I told you. What did you... no, I mean... But discovering music, like my parents saw me like on my... I would be like bedside mm-hmm. pretending to be Ray Charles. I was a mimic as far back as I can remember. And they saw me doing that and they got me this toy piano and I was playing on the toy piano a lot. And then as soon as we moved to Montana, I think at age like 5 and a half or something like that, I went into classical piano training mm-hmm. and took to it pretty well. And I loved, but I was also social. So for me, it was like, oh, I get to be with all these kids and like, oh, I'll learn music. But what about all these kids? You know, the music was fascinating. But really, I think that's what creates that adaptability. Because for me, the one thing I always tell all my artist friends where they're like, you know, I'm doing this one thing, but I'm not sure. I'm thinking about maybe doing painting. I'm like, those are just extensions of yourself. It's like if you imagine yourself as like a person sitting on a floor and you're surrounded by all these different medium tools, you can rotate to any position and pick one. It's like the core is always the same. You're the creator. Pick different tools, but you've got the most important part, which is like, I have an idea of something I want to do. And so for me, I think music enabled that because I would be on the playground. It would save me if, you know, people would be like, they'd be hostile towards me. And I would start singing like Olivia Newton-John or something. Let's get physical. And they'd be like,
see,
oh, that's
I tried
a good
that
song.
And I was, again, savagely beaten.
Were you? Yeah. Let's pick the right
Let's
song.
Let's get physical, physical.
Okay.
Sure I know thing. How to stop these hooligans.
Sure thing, O'Brien.
Yeah.
How about this for physical?
Yeah. Hey, O'Brien, we're going to beat the shit out of you. No, I don't think so, sir. For I'm about to sing a classic tune by Olivia Newton-John.
What the fuck?
Oh, you'll see. Let's get physical, physical.
Oh, my God.
When I awoke in the ICU.
Oh, God.
There's not one unbroken bone in his body.
True, though. True.
That bully was Olivia Newton-John.
I'm just imagining the bullies.
What was she doing at the playground?
Just imagining the bullies going like, is that all of them? It's like, I don't know. I think this pinky is like, okay,
yeah,
now
one
we're
more.
Done. Get out of here. Masterpiece.
Yeah. These are bullies that really took their job seriously. And if they found out later on that there was an unbroken pinky, they were like,
yeah.
You know, you got to respect your craft.
It's a warranty.
Did the teachers just watch this happen too? Or are they joining
in?
Oh,
they would sell seats.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
O'Brien, left uppercut. O'Brien, watch out.
There's another beating of O'Brien. Everyone to the north side of the parking lot.
Roger that. We're suspending all lessons for the day.
The SAT has been canceled. The PSAT has been canceled. No one's going to college. Goodyear blimp passes. It's already got like messaging about me. The Conan beating. You know what else can take a beating? A Goodyear tire.
No, totally. Yeah, yeah. Soft, soft focus, hard on the tire.
So it's funny. You're also you're so influenced. You're so influenced by pop culture at this time too, because you're a sponge, you are watching television. You're watching movies, and you're picking up on comedy. What stuff are you watching? What are you loving?
Man, we were kind of speaking earlier about the Pink Panther
movies with Peter Sellers. Yes.
And my dad and I would watch those. And I remember probably the most intense laughter I ever had with my father that I can remember is Peter Sellers doing that bit where he's on the parallel bars.
I'm talking about, I've talked about the same thing.
Oh my God.
I swear to God, this is in my, if I've only left with 8 images in my brain before I die. Okay, I'll reserve some for my 2 children and my wife.
Okay.
I'll give them 3
Good
spots.
Idea.
But then the rest is going to be, and one of them is going to be Peter Sellers on the parallel bars upstairs in the mansion.
Next to a flight of stairs going down.
Yes. Dismounts and with a graceful dismount and falls down the stairs. Look this up on YouTube or wherever you want to see it. He's because he's so poppy. He's like, is it parallel bars? I did this at the Lyceum, you know, and he gets on them and he's doing, and then he dismounts and then and crashes into the room where the staff has been assembled for his questioning. And my favorite thing is he enters a room with all of his dignity and authority stripped because he just fell down a flight of stairs, but immediately stands up.
Yes.
And well, we'll just
That scene when that was happening, I mean, because you're just watching it and going, okay, sure. All right, swinging back and forth. That's great. Yeah. All right, cool. So you done with your Salisbury steak? And then that happens, and like my dad and I lost it. We were laughing for quite a while.
That's so funny because I would go to the movie theater when those movies would come out, and I would go, my family would go, my father would go, and that's where I would, you always pay attention to, and this is what I can relate to, is I would watch my dad. Like if my dad was laughing really hard, that was because when you're a kid and sometimes you're not sure how you're going to connect with your dad.
True.
I think times have changed a little bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's true.
If at all you feel that I don't quite know how to connect with this guy, he can seem remote. Sometimes I'm grumpy and he's scared. He's at work a lot. And then when you see him laughing really hard at that, at a moment in a Pink Panther movie like that, there's no coincidence that later on you find out, I'm in comedy.
Yeah. Oh, man.
This is my way of connecting to people.
100%. My dad was like a very strange guy. You know, he was like very quiet because he's a war vet. And he was obviously more animated when I was younger. But it was just like few and far between. Like those were our moments to connect. It was really humor. Him laughing at me, like
doing something dumb or whatever, or like hiding peas, you know, like in my pocket when they weren't looking, and then like him discovering it and then just like laughing about it. Like those types of things.
It's in your book. Yeah. He had PTSD.
He had
a lot of trauma from serving. He had been in Vietnam. Is that right?
He had been in Vietnam. He hadn't seen like a ton of action, but he did see some action towards the end of his second round in Vietnam. And so I think, you know, all that stuff catches up to you, even if you're not like on the front line, even if you're on the base. And I mean, like I think he was on a base and had gotten notice that they were surrounded and that the Vietnamese were closing in on this base. And so everybody was arming up and getting ready. And then there was a notice that said the war was over.
Yeah.
So it didn't happen. But right, I mean, right. I couldn't imagine the stress of just like this impending thing. And you're like, I don't know how this is going to turn out. All of that definitely got to him. And so, I mean, that, I will say that unlike some of my friends who've had difficult times with their fathers, I think he did the best he could.
Yeah.
With what he had.
Like, yeah.
Really, you know, and who knows? He was ill prepared for that. He also didn't have any help. There was like nobody going like, well, you've got shell shock. Let's sit down and talk about it.
Right.
That was more esoteric, or it was more for people that were a little bit more forward thinking. My mom was always like, go in the basement and yell, you know, and he just wouldn't do any of that stuff. He'd just kind of be silent and hang out in the dark at 2 a.m.
So, but you could connect to him through comedy and through music.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think he wasn't like a guy that was like, I'm really proud of you, son. He didn't do that. But you kind of knew when I knew when he dug something, or he would just be like, oh, man, this guy's crazy. Or, you know, he would shake his head and have this grin on his face. And I knew that that was him going like, I don't know what this guy is, but I like him.
What's interesting to me is that you were in a legit band when you start to discover I can kind of do comedy using these same tools. I mean, your repertoire is you can play all these different instruments, but also by messing around with pedals, getting different sounds going, you're able to start to make something and repeating phrases, and it's really cool to watch you put it all together. But when do you start to figure that out, and do the members of the legitimate band get irritated that you're doing that? Do you know what I mean?
Massively irritated. People would be annoyed with me doing comedic bits, because you know I did comedy in high school. We had competitive drama, so I got to do humorous solo the first year, and it was just very strange to just get on a tour bus. Here's $40 for the weekend and two nights at a hotel, and good luck competing against other students from around the state in a weird high school on a weekend, you know. And so, but it was great because you'd meet all these other drama kids that are all a bunch of weirdos, you know. So they're just like doing these crazy monologues, and you're like, okay, great. And what am I going to do? I don't know. But my teacher was like, hey, you can do whatever you want. It's okay if you want to improvise. And then I would improvise. So I think all of that, and then actually I tried out for a stand-up competition in high school and won it, and it was like $300 or something like that, and immediately bought like a shit ton of weed for my friends. My friends were like, great, you won. Do you want to buy some weed? Like immediately. It's like not about like you were great up there and you won. It's like we got money now. You want to get some.
You did good at the weed winning competition. Just like, you did the stand-up thing? Whatever.
Yeah, totally. But
the weed procuring thing went well.
I did good with weed. But like, yeah, so I mean, I think that's started creeping back in because, you know, I have a hyperactive imagination, and when I'm on stage and I hear a sound or like someone says something, and that immediately links to some other silly thing, and I can't help it after a while. You know, there were times when I understood it. I mean, you know, you're the drummer back there. You don't have a mic, and you're like, what the fuck is this guy doing? You know, like I get it. It was I wasn't like, you guys should understand me. But there were definitely moments when I felt them going, like, can we just play the next song? Like, yes, that's a good idea. Let's play the next song.
When did you decide, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out on my own, and I'm going to use this tech that I have and my improvisational skills and my wits, and I'm going to make this musical mashup of music comedy. When does that happen?
I mean, that happened, I think, when I was about 31, 32. I was in my band Mock Tube, which was a really amazing band to be a part of, a great band. But we had been, I think we'd been together for 5 years, and we'd gone through a bunch of hype cycles with labels and like you know, execs coming out, Jimmy Iovine coming out to watch us and like doing showcases in LA and stuff like that, Viper Room. And almost something would happen. And then we'd go back to like, oh, they passed or whatever. And then we would work on another record or something like that. And I just wasn't seeing it evolving beyond, you know, the third time that we'd gone through that. So, and I was doing comedy, and then I saw, what are they called? Michael Showalter, Michael Ian Black.
Oh, the State?
David
yeah, the
Wayne.
State.
Not oh, the State. Stella. Stella. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was post-State. I learned about State later, but I saw Stella and I was like, what is this? Those little shorts shot on DV.
Yep.
And I was like, this is my humor. These guys know how meaningless things are. And like, and that's so beautiful. And so I identified with that. And then they ended up, I think Wet Hot American Summer came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I saw that and I was like, totally like, oh, that's yes, I want to do that. You know, I was so driven and inspired by those things. And then they happened to come to town. Stella did come to town. I met Eugene Merman and I was introduced by a friend, and he was like, we have a comedy night in New York, you know. And then I ended up writing with a band, and they needed me in New York for the writing session for a month. So while I was there, I did a couple spots at Invite Them Up and instant friends with everybody.
That's great.
It was like being in high school again. I mean, when some of my younger friends or younger artists are like, you know, how do you make it? And, you know, how'd you, basically that's like the question, but how do you make it? And I'm like, well, I don't know. You don't have to worry about making it. Like, what you have to make is the thing that you love to do.
Yes.
And do that. Yeah. You know, I always tell people, like, if you wake up in the morning and you can't not be thinking about a bit, and if you're always doing bits, like, that's kind of what you are.
Yeah.
You're not going to change that, so you might as well make a career out of it.
No. I've always maintained that my career is me doing what I'd be doing anyway. And then I was fortunate to find some people who had money, who and you know, owned the machinery, who were like, well, you can do it for us. But it's the dirty little secret is that if they said, well, we're done and we're taking away all the equipment, I'd say, okay, well, back to my bits.
Yeah, I'm trying to here are my old bits. Like, you just open up this closet.
Whatever. Like, and I would just do it in an empty field. Yes. And I think, totally. And a, you know, whatever, a passing dove would say, that seems sad.
Yeah, totally.
He's not aging well. He sure isn't. Who are you, Mr. Turtle?
Literally knew you could talk.
Everyone
just becomes this whole thing about how they can't believe each other can talk. Yeah. You're like, but my bits.
We're finding out we can talk. Like, and you're obsessed with your bit, Conan?
Yeah, but here's my bit about Ronald Reagan. You know,
Well,
that's not interesting enough. So how did you learn to talk?
Toadstool? How could the toadstool not like my Reagan bit? You write in the book that I noticed that just in tour that the women are quite taken with Mr. Reggie Watts. And then you write in the book that your dream girl is Pippi Longstocking.
Oh, me too.
Really?
Girly?
I had a huge crush on Inger Nilsson, the original.
Oh, yeah. Well, also the concept, but yes. She was great. Okay. She was great. She was a great embodiment of it, yes.
Yeah. Oh, and Inger called stop writing her letters.
Well, no, but because of this show, they interviewed me for a Pippi documentary.
No!
So we talked about it on here, and they sent me a signed vinyl with Inger, Tommy, and Annika.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, who are the other two?
Tommy and Annika.
Okay. Can you fill in just for people that are listening and had some sort of a childhood? What, people want to know who the other two are.
Tommy and Annika are like her normal kid sidekicks.
Okay. You know?
Yeah,
that's all we needed to know.
Yeah. They're friends. They're part of the crew. Yeah.
But she's amazing.
She's amazing. She was super strong.
Uh-huh.
She had a basement full of treasure, so she had unlimited funds.
Yeah.
She could travel anywhere.
She could lift a horse.
She could, you know, she was magical. She had, like, you know, red hair. I'm half redhead. You know, she had pigtails that were magical, and, mm-hmm. like, she had cool style.
Yeah. I'm having such a sense memory right now. I'm in my grandfather's small house in Missquamacut, Rhode Island. And there's a Pippi Longstocking movie that comes on, and this might have been with Inger.
I'm sure.
And it was, and back then there's only three channels. This TV in Missquamacut, Connecticut, near the State Beach, doesn't get much reception of anything. So you'd see the same thing over and over again, and they were running a commercial for the Pippi Longstocking movie.
Yeah.
And there was just one line that rang in my head, which is a weird overdubbed. Someone, I think, overdubbing.
Yeah, because it was Swedish.
It's Swedish.
Then her accent would change from film to film. She would have just like a transatlantic, and then some films she'd just be like, I'm from Brooklyn. I'm Pippi Longstocking. You know?
Well, okay, so what I remember, you tell me if this at all rings a bell, is she's lifting a horse. She's running super fast, like at 100 miles an hour, and they've just sped up her legs. She's doing all these crazy things. And then they just cut to a very European weird kid, and it looked like poor quality film stock, who goes, Pippi, are you crazy?
Yeah, that's probably Tommy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I remember seeing that and going, what kind of movie is this?
You summed it
up. My grandfather, a retired policeman, would say, turn that crap off. Pippi, are you crazy? Wow. So
but they're
why?
Using clips from this podcast in that documentary because we talked about it.
Well,
time.
We're going to talk about it more now.
I know.
And, where's my cut, by the way? I want a piece of that.
Yeah. Pippi money's
here. Pippi money. Give me that long stocking.
I want in on that long stocking money. So what is it about Pippi Longstocking? You first and then you, Matt. What is it?
I think I don't know. I guess I liked that she was like fully independent. Mm-hmm. You know, like she ran her own operation. And she ran her own operation. She just went on adventures. She was just like going on adventures all the time because that's what she was. Her grandfather was a pirate or something. Her father was a pirate, but no longer in the picture. And then, you know, and had like this gang of kids. And I don't know. I had a huge crush on her. I thought that she was hot.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think Superman was always the ideal when you're a kid, but Pippi was kind of a little bit more realistic. Her dad left her alone.
That's right.
Just to live in this house called Villa Villa Kula. And he just goes and sails the seas. And I had a huge crush on her too. Yeah. I think she was maybe like Blondie and Pippi were my first two crushes.
Yeah. Blondie was pretty amazing.
Yeah. They're a little different, but.
Or you know what? Dale Bozzio.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, who's
from Berlin?
Missing Persons.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Band?
Woman. She's like.
Yeah, she looked like Blondie, kind of, right?
She kind of looked like a cross between Blondie, that people are going to kill me. But like a cross between, and who's the dude from Twisted Sister?
Oh, Dee Snider.
Dee Snider. Yeah.
Like a tiny bit, like a hair, like
5%. I have a huge crush on Dee Snider.
You do? There you go.
Yeah, that's my ideal.
There you go.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. No, Blondie really hit big my freshman year of high school. And I remembered her just being the ideal. Like, oh, that's the sexiest. And she still is.
Yeah, she's
For God's sake. She's the sexiest, coolest woman alive.
We need to get Blondie and Pippi on this podcast.
Yeah. And have them fight.
Yeah, but Pippi would probably win.
She'd start beating Blondie and I'd go, Pippi, are you crazy?
16 millimeter. Stored improperly.
Okay, here's another huge influence on you, and you mentioned it in the book, the Ferris Bueller. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes, huge.
That was a huge influence on you because he broke the fourth wall.
That was mind blowing. I mean, it was one of the smartest moves of a movie script ever, I think. I mean, sure, not the first movie, but definitely of those coming of age films, which I was all about. I just liked all the things that he accomplished in a day. I mean, it was insane. And like, is he going to make it? You know, all that rascally principal, you know, and his sister is kind of badass, you know, like there was so many adventurous things, and it only took place in a day. And then at the end, like him, or just once in a while throughout the movie too, but like looking at the camera, I was like, that is so cool. I love that, like, we're in on it. Like he's experiencing that reality for us.
And also, it's very hard to do because it can be done badly.
Yes.
And of course, John Hughes and Matthew Broderick, they did it perfectly.
Yeah, it was just like it was practical.
It's kind of a perfect movie.
It's totally a perfect movie. I've watched it. You know, some of those movies are like, ugh. But just moments of it are kind of, you know, Breakfast Club.
This is totally aside and random, but I was down in Venice here in California with David Hopping like a week and a half ago, and we wander into a store. And I'm chatting with the guy who runs the store, and he says to a woman there who's also working there, this very attractive woman who's probably in her early 20s or mid 20s. And he says to her, I can't remember her name, but he says, like, you know, Syria, tell Conan your story. Tell her your story. And she comes over kind of sheepishly because she's being forced to. And she says, my parents are the parents on Ferris Bueller. And I said, "What? What do you mean?" And she said, "The two actors that play the mother and the father on Ferris Bueller, they met on that movie.
What?
And they're my parents."
Oh my God!
And then the guy at the store is like, "Isn't that crazy?"
Oh!
And at this point, I feel like I have to buy something. they met on that movie, and then she is their child, and she is drop dead gorgeous.
Oh my
by the way.
God!
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, and very nice and very cool. But I just thought, wait a minute, are you insane that you think? Because when you think of people who are playing a couple in a movie, yeah. you
right.
never think.
No.
And she said, no, they met on that movie and then had me.
She's the real life
my
Bueller.
God.
She is the real life Bueller.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That was a cool story.
She's real Bueller. That's crazy. Does she ever just randomly stop in the middle of the street and just turn to a camera that's not there?
Well, I was.
Get a load of me.
Yeah. Yeah. She did while I was talking
oh,
to
no
her.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. She turned to a camera that wasn't there and said, I meet a lot of celebrities at this store here, in near Venice Beach. Conan, kind of bottom of the pile. But you know what? You got to pretend to be excited. And then she turned back to me.
Oh, you were still there?
I was still there.
Oh, man.
And I said, that's rude. And then she turned back to a different camera and said, who knew he could hear me?
Multicam.
Yeah, multicam.
The fifth wall.
Yeah.
She broke the fifth wall.
She broke so many walls, the roof collapsed.
That's not easy to do.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
She's living in a hypercube.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know her name, but shout out to her. And
no kidding,
very, and very lovely, cool person.
So
I'll
glad
just put
to
that
know
out
that.
There.
That's
yeah.
fucking mind blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Bueller. Bueller is great, but also I love Weird Science. Weird Science was huge. Like Weird Science.
Weird Science is so insane.
So insane.
Because I'm sorry, but the premise is
crazy.
The premise
so crazy.
Is crazy. It's because I remembered seeing that. This is how old I am. I saw that in the theater. As an adult who could choose to purchase or not purchase a ticket.
Yes.
And I went with Greg Daniels because we were both writers and we had no girlfriends, big surprise. We're living out here in L.A. and this movie comes out, Weird Science. And we think, well, let's go to Westwood and watch it.
To learn how to make a girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. We both need to make a girlfriend, clearly, because no one we meet wants to talk to us. So we go to this theater and these two guys just basically, I think, cut out a bunch of pictures from magazines.
Yes.
And feed them into a what?
A supercomputer.
Yeah. A supercomputer.
But a home right? computer.
Then they.
A brassiere.
Yeah, then a brassiere.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
I
a
think.
A Barbie doll.
Yeah.
The out for. And there's a Barbie doll. And then I think because they run a cable to the roof and lightning hits it, that makes Kelly LeBrock.
That's true.
That's.
Yeah. Yeah, now, but they designed her on the computer.
But I was like, the leaps people were making with, if you take a personal computer and there's a lightning storm and you have a bra and some dolls around, you
mostly
can make Kelly LeBrock.
Yeah, computers were still like fancy enough that you couldn't pin it down for, could it do that?
Yeah, what? I know. Yeah. People just didn't question it. Yeah. They're like,
no,
that'll happen.
I guess that can happen with a computer and a lightning storm. If they both happen at the same time.
It's very hot. So, those kids got lucky in that movie.
I remembered that happening and being like a 22-year-old in the theater and just saying, okay, I guess I really don't understand computers.
I'm glad that
but
was
myself and my writing partner, we went out that night. We bought an apple. We bought seven Barbies.
Yeah. And you're still waiting.
And
for that
Greg was electrocuted.
No LeBrock. Here he is, electrocuted, LeBrockless.
The firefighters showed up, and all they said when they saw us, we were both smoldering, was, trying to make a LeBrock, huh?
A lot of that lately.
We got two more nerds on Barrington trying to make a LeBrock.
You two stop LeBrocking around. Get out of here. Yeah.
Enough LeBrocking, you idiots. All the power surge is going in these different nerd areas of town.
But then some shadow creature emerges in the background. That show was. I mean, also it had Mad Max vibes in it. It had it was so crazy.
The guy from Mad Max.
Yeah, the guy from Mad Max was in it. It was insane. But the crazy thing was that my first girlfriend was English, and she was a model for teen nightwear or something like that. And so she came from London because her mother married an Air Force guy, and so my first girlfriend was like this English brunette model. I was like, how's this even possible? Like, I was just watching Weird Science,
you
and
did
now
it.
My first girlfriend is this. It was very, very weird.
Right.
And I was very insecure about it because I was like, there's no way the whole time. There's no way. There's no, you know, it's like, which is not the right attitude.
And when you're saying that out loud and you're with her.
There's no way. No way. Can't touch your shoulder. Oh, there's no way. No
there's
way.
No way.
No way.
While you're having sex. What? There's just no way. There's just no way. Way.
What? No way.
There's no way. You're totally leaving me. Can we at least finish this first? Baby born. Where? There's no way.
How? My new book, How? My Life with the Real Kelly LeBrock. It's like, what?
I love that you have also had a Seattle period, which I totally get, because you went to Seattle to, you wanted to experience creativity, randomness, so you just decided I'm going to Seattle.
Yeah.
And cloud cover that's about 6 inches above the roof line of any house.
Yeah, it's about like max 100 feet. Yeah. I mean, it was the biggest city closest to Great Falls. I mean, you could drive there in 13 hours, which for Montanans, that's double the usual.
That's a trip to CVS.
Yeah. It's like, you know, oh, you got to go through Mountain Pass. Got to take your time, though. There is a shortcut through Lolo, but don't worry about it. You know, just keep going straight.
Right.
Black ice patches reportedly on the like two-wheel drive right now. But yeah, I mean, it was close enough, and then I got lucky. You know, I've been lucky everywhere I've moved, but like I moved there in 1990. It was just before grunge was going to explode, and so I was living, you know, like with a bunch of weirdos in a house as a band, and like that shit blew up, and I was a huge Soundgarden fan.
Cool.
And seeing all of that explode, and then see the industry move into that town so fast with all these satellite offices looking for the next new thing, and then four new, because when I moved there were two venues to play at. That was it. It was like two venues, nighttime, hardly any cars driving around the streets. Right. It was so dead. It was such a small town vibe anyways. And then within a period of about 3 years, it completely changed. It was insane. And then coffee was like, espresso culture was born there.
Oh my Lord. My wife is from Seattle and I got married there, and it's my you know, home away from home, because we go there. Just when I was first dating my wife, I'd say like, oh, you know, let's go get some coffee. And she said, we are not going in there, because she was like a sommelier of coffee.
Yep.
Oh, no, they burn the coffee there. Well, what about we could go in this place? No, we're not going there either. I'll tell you where we're going to get coffee. And she would take me to the one place that made the coffee just right.
Yep.
And I couldn't taste the difference.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I still can't taste the difference.
I
grew up on Sanka, you know, like I didn't know.
Sanka's
difference.
Good enough. I'd take Sanka over Starbucks any day. But like I it was a crazy time to be there. And we played Jeff Bezos's parties. I played like two of his parties, like met him like in 1995, 1996. Mm-hmm. Saw Bill Gates, you know, like at a restaurant that I used to go to. You know, like it was really weird to have all those worlds, you know, these ripples that are now affecting our entire everyday lives. So, but being there in that moment, when
playing a party like that just sounds
crazy.
It always reminds me of, I did not, I wrote on the script, but I didn't write this joke, but there was a great Simpsons joke that one of the writers came up with, which Mr. Burns is having a birthday party. And of course, Smithers is trying to make it the perfect party for him. So, and at one point he books the Ramones to play for Mr. Burns, and the Ramones, they got the actual Ramones to go like, nah, 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 happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. And then they drop their instruments and Joey Ramone just goes, happy birthday, you old bastard. And walks off, and they cut to Mr. Burns, and he says to Smithers, have the Rolling Stones killed? and Smithers says, sir, that's not the Rolling Stones. And he says, do it! And so Smithers leaves. And it's always loved the joke that somewhere the Rolling Stones are being killed
in that world.
Because that old man misidentified them.
Oh, my God.
Have the Rolling... And I think about that all the time I imagine me playing or having to do anything at one of those parties. If I was, you know, on the David Geffen yacht and told a story or did some kind of comedy thing, I could just see Geffen leaning over to someone and saying, have the Rolling Stones killed? Have Gallagher destroyed? Sir, that's not Gallagher. Do it! Have Carrot Top murdered? Sir, that's not. Do it!
All these,
have all Jane Lynch. That's sir.
Oh, no.
All these redheads start
not
just
Jane.
Dying.
Damn it! Yeah, just going through. Listen, Mr. Reggie Watts, I've been blessed many times in my life, but the day that you signed on to be my opening act, and I got to go on that crazy adventure with you, and then we became friends. Was a great, great day for me, and I'm blessed to know you. Keep me in your life, and let's do something together again.
I would love to do that. Let's do that.
Let's open a store that sells something nobody wants.
Yes. Oh, my God, and see how long it takes to not sell anything.
And we'll get the woman in Venice.
She'll manage. She'll manage.
And it'll be called, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Ferris Bueller's parents do have a child.
Ferris Bueller's half off.
You idiot.
TRFB.
I admire that. Ferris Bueller's half off. All right, Mr. Reggie Watts, go in peace to love and serve the Lord. Have a nice day. Have a nice week.
And peace be with you.
And peace be with you. Glarm. We're going to make a woman.
We have an ongoing saga on this podcast that continues to write its own narrative.
You're
it is that
terrible author.
I'm not writing it. I'm just living it. Remember that Jay Elmore, who runs a deli in New York, has taken our sandwich creations and has been selling them, and he has an update on the numbers. He's running actual science now.
This is good.
Because last time you also... You complained about the fact that I had an American flag in mine, and you said that that was responsible for why I was leading sales.
I think that goosed things a little bit.
Okay. So
because, we're patriotic people, and yours had an American flag, and ours had no flag. Mm. So I think that put us at a disadvantage.
He took the flag out.
Thank you.
And started the tally again.
Good.
Okay. These are Jay's words. Once again, I just wanted to say you made my day with the mention of on the podcast. I'm so happy you guys are enjoying it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, you sounded angry. That's a lot of skin off your nose.
No free pub.
551 sandwiches sold. Final tally so far. Sona's Euro, 172. Conan's Corned Beef, 186. Matty Melt, 193.
Oh, these are all pretty close.
Yes, and then it goes on. Okay. He said, I will cross the 200 mark today. Conan may cross it too. He said, Matty Melt, these are updates as they come in. Matty Melt just hit 200. Conan is at 6 away. I said, stall it, take it off the menu, meaning yours.
Where is this?
New York.
I know, but let's be a little clear about where this place is, because I'd like to make a personal appeal.
I don't know where it is exactly.
Isn't this EJ's Luncheonette?
Yeah.
I believe it's on the Upper East Side, 3rd Avenue between 73rd and 74th.
Right.
EJ's.
Right.
A very nice guy named Jay came out of his diner and said hello to me. We chatted for a little bit. That's when the idea for maybe these sandwiches came up. And I would just like to say that my sandwich is, I believe it's a corned beef, Russian dressing, coleslaw. It's a terrific sandwich. It's a classic. And it's called the Conan O'Brien or just the Conan?
I think it's just, I'm not sure.
Okay.
So are you saying that the name recognition is important?
Well, what I'm saying is, I would like to win this.
Oh.
And so I'm talking to all my listeners now who might
be
in New York City. Just hear me out.
Oh.
Maybe give my sandwich a try.
No.
Go there and order it. And then if you see me around New York City, I'm there a lot. Just mention I had your sandwich, Conan. And maybe you get a little quick hug and a selfie. That's all.
Okay. Oh, my God.
You can't use the bully pulpit like that.
Yeah.
You have to give equal time to us.
I don't know what kind of cash I'll have on me, but I don't carry a lot of cash. I'll just say that right
You're
now.
You're going to go and just buy a ton of sandwiches, probably.
No.
I feel like you probably will.
I'm going to have David Hopping buy a lot of sandwiches.
Jay, you have to watch out for the Sona. You can make your plea for your Euro.
Mine is clearly the healthiest.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Oh, nothing gets people into a diner like a healthy choice. Good job. Yes, if you are going to EJ's Luncheonette because you're really feeling like slimming down, rush over and get Sona's Gyro?
Euro.
I love to pretend not to know how to say it.
Sure,
and then yours is what, a foreign sandwich, right?
What? Where's no, mine's the most patriotic thing. It's called a Matty Melt.
Yeah, what's going on there?
It's a patty melt with Hawaiian bread.
Yeah, calories, calories, death, death.
That's what do you mean?
Cholesterol, this? Fat.
No, no, no. That's not the way to go
Come
after
on,
it.
That let gets me
people.
Do it.
No, that gets people into the tent.
No.
This is America. You forgot where you were.
Yeah. But it's New York. People care in New York. They walk. They're healthy. They work out. They do
Hawaii
yoga.
Became a state very late in the
no,
game.
No, I've not got. That,
oh, and I'm just gonna say, to, I'm, no,
that's
I'm,
better.
That's like the last star. On the flag, that's the bread you want.
Oh, what a label.
Go ahead.
Based in New York with Hawaiian bread, I'm covering not only the continental United States, but practically Hawaii and Alaska.
Oh, please, with corned beef, I am covering, I mean, just all cultures.
No.
You know, yes.
What?
Yes. The Jewish people, the Irish people.
Done. That's it.
Seriously.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Greeks are responsible for our whole civilization.
Are you kidding?
What are you
the
talking about?
Sign the Constitution.
Okay. First of all, what did you say the Greeks did?
They're like responsible for our like modern type of civilization.
That's true.
Yeah. What have they done lately?
Right.
Except
shield
bankrupt.
A bunch of money. Yeah.
I know.
A bunch of tax shelters.
Exactly.
I
tax
don't
shelter.
Know.
They
yeah, tax shelter.
You know what? Socrates kept all of his money in a tax shelter.
Yeah. Okay.
That was his big advice to his students.
All right, great, right. great.
Shelter so, your money, he said. Same thing with Plato.
Yeah.
Because the U.S. is doing great, you guys.
What did
yeah.
you say?
What'd yeah,
you say?
The U.S. is doing great.
With attitudes
say?
Like that.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay, right. well, guess what? Your gyro. I think it's plummeted because it's healthy and its inventor hates America.
Right. Oh, wow.
I would say, hey, give the Conan O'Brien a try. EJ's
Isn't
Luncheonette.
It hard?
EJ's Luncheonette. Just go on by. Check it out. The Conan O'Brien.
Man, oh, corn come beef, on.
Corned beef, coleslaw.
Here's my message. I say, listener, eat whatever you think sounds delicious.
Hero.
Be you, be you. Don't fall prey to sway.
Hero.
Don't fall prey to sway.
Hero.
Eat. Mm-hmm. Eat the meat.
I
don't
will,
fall prey to sway. Eat the meat.
I'll take a selfie with you. I'll give you a quick hello.
Oh my God.
I'm easy to spot in New York. If you think you see Jane Lynch wearing a red wig, that's me.
If you do buy mine, you don't have to take a selfie with Conan.
You can get out of it. All right.
Thank you, Jay.
I think we accomplished a lot there. And thanks to Jay Elmore for selling, creating these sandwiches in our image.
And there's a very good chance that this saga will actually have quite a resolution, possibly even in the flesh.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
More later.
Why don't we get a piece of these sandwiches? Sorry, I know we ended it, but why don't we get paid for a piece of these sandwiches? Like, we should get a check.
Gosh.
No?
Okay.
No check?
No.
Nobody else?
No, we're not doing this for money.
Oh. What are we doing it for?
Real estate.
Conan O'Brien needs a friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Ovsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 669-587-2847 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.